So the full motto of Glasgow is "Let Glasgow flourish by the preaching of his words and the praising of his name."
Okay.
So that's truncated now by the council to just "Let Glasgow flourish." But the full motto reflects its Christian heritage, you know, this place that the gospel and the church had in society going back for several centuries now.
Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name is Adrian Reynolds, Head of National Ministries for the FIEC. And I'm here on location in Andy's house with Andy Hunter, our Director for Scotland. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Adrian. Good to have you here.
Yes. And thanks for the welcome to Glasgow. We're in Glasgow. And also Rachel Stone. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Rachel, you are one of our directors for Women's Ministry.
I am, yes.
And Glasgow is not your home.
It is not my home. I come from the east, from Edinburgh.
From Edinburgh. So we've got a Glasgow representative and a Edinburgh representative. I'm sitting you on opposite sides of the table, so you don't beat one another up. We also ought to say we're here with Fern. You may get to, if you're watching on video, you may see Fern moving around. Who is Fern, Rachel?
She's the dog I share with my parents.
So you have a dog share?
I do have a dog share.
And what kind of dog is Fern?
Fern is a Springer Spaniel.
A Springer Spaniel, and she's doing quite a lot of springing.
Yeah.
So sometimes when we're on location, we hear the hum, you know, the hum of conversations and noise behind us. Today we have the hum of panting.
Yeah.
Panting dog. So if you hear a bit of panting, that's what's going on. So thanks for joining us. We're thinking today about Scotland as a nation and thinking about the gospel in Scotland, just to try and get a flavour really of what's going on. What are some of the joys there are in gospel work in Scotland? What are some of the challenges that there are? And I think we kind of have this idea, I think sometimes, that the UK is just this sort of monolith, and we know it's not. Actually, wherever we live, we don't have to go very far to find somewhere different. But what I really want to explore with you a little bit is just to think about Scotland in particular. Mm. We long for the gospel to flourish, don't we, all around the nation, of the UK, sorry, the nations. I'm going to get this right. I'm going to get told off. All around the nations of the United Kingdom. The clue's in the name, isn't it? United Kingdom.
Yeah.
So we long for the gospel to flourish all around the nations of the United Kingdom. And that means wherever you come from, whether you're listening and you're in Wales, whether you're in Ireland, whether you're in England, or indeed whether you're listening from somewhere else overseas, you should want the gospel to flourish in Scotland. So Andy, just help us a little bit. What's the kind of general lie of the land? In Scotland, we tend to think of, you know, Scotland immediately, I think, Nicola Sturgeon, or I think football or rugby, or but in gospel terms, there's a deep, rich heritage, isn't there, of gospel work in Scotland? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that is the big thing with Scotland, isn't it, is its great Christian heritage. So famously known as the land of the book, the Bible, the land of John Knox, of lots of missionaries.
So at the coronation, it is the Scottish representative who hands over the Bible, isn't it, to the British monarch.
The moderator of the Church of Scotland is there.
Yep.
Scotland, which in the Reformation was a nation covenanted by its parliament to upholding the Reformed Protestant faith. So an astonishing kind of rich history, a place where hundreds, if not thousands, of missionaries were sent out across the world. Cities that were hugely evangelised. Back even in the 1930s, Glasgow was described as one of the most evangelised cities on the planet.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's something to do with something in the motto, is there, to do with?
Yeah, so the full motto of Glasgow is "Let Glasgow flourish by the preaching of his words and the praising of his name."
Okay.
So that's truncated now by the council to just "Let Glasgow flourish." But the full motto reflects its Christian heritage, you know, this place that the gospel and the church had in society going back for several centuries now. So that's been a big part of the story of Scotland. And actually, one of the kind of interesting things about Scotland, one of the sad things about Scotland, is how that has collapsed so rapidly over recent years. So if you go back to the 1950s, I mean, it'd be the same obviously in England and London. You know, you would have nights where 15,000 people queued night after night outside the Kelvin Hall in Glasgow to hear Billy Graham. We were talking beforehand about when I was growing up in the 80s, after the 10 o'clock news on STV, Scottish Television, there would be a nightly slot for a minister to address the nation.
I just find that extraordinary that was the case.
So,
and that's relatively recent.
Yeah,
well, Rachel, you're young, but Andy, you and I, that's within our living memory.
Yeah, up until the late 80s, maybe the early 90s. And sometimes what the minister or the religious person said wasn't all that, But the point was, that was the status, you know, the kind of privilege that the church had, was that, you know, if you wanted to, you could hear a minister give his thoughts nightly on Scottish television.
Mm. Amazing. Mm. Andy, I'm just going to get you to move slightly, because all at the moment people can do is see the back of your head. You may think that's a mercy, but people do want to gaze upon your beauty. Yeah. So that's a bit nice. Does that sort of, you know, very rich, deeply ingrained Christian culture, if you like, in Glasgow, is that replicated in Edinburgh? Or is it a very different kind of place?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that's what would have been everywhere.
So
in
lots
Scotland.
Of church buildings.
Lots of church buildings. Lots of people would have grown up going to church. When I moved to Edinburgh in 95, kind of the sacredness of a Sunday was still something that in popular culture in that sense. So, yeah, still very much kind of people knew about church in that sense. Okay. And classes in school in that sense as well would have been really helpful. Really. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I guess, I mean, we slightly hear about, you know, arguments when there's going to be a Sunday ferry, that it's the Christians who are always opposing it. But so you were just saying to me earlier, that sort of, that's the keeping Sunday special has been part of Scottish heritage probably for longer than it has been in England,
very much
and Wales.
So. I'm going to say, let's put her in the garden.
She'll be all right. Don't worry. Leave her there.
Put her in the garden.
People are entertained by Fern. She wants to contribute. She wants a headset. She's fine. Yeah, so that's kind of more deeply ingrained in life.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And give us some stats. Come on, I know you love a stat. And you've got a piece of paper in front of you with some bullet points on.
Yes,
which I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but give us some stats. Give us a sense.
Well, I mean, going back historically, so even in the 1950s, Church of Scotland membership accounted at one point for 25% of the Scottish population. So it's quite an astonishing kind of catch-all. Now, of course, a lot of nominalism there, a lot of cultural Christianity. But in terms of people's Christian identification, would have been quite high.
Can you just help me? I'm going to be the duffer. Yeah. Right? I'm going to play the duffer. Yeah. Church of Scotland, is that essentially the equivalent of establishment in England?
Yeah. Mm. So
there's also an Episcopal Church.
That's right. Which
doesn't have the same status.
Yeah, which is the equivalent of the kind of Anglican Church in Scotland. So the Church of Scotland is the kind of national church. So what people have to understand is, of course, there wasn't a British Reformation.
Yeah.
There was a Scottish Reformation and an English Reformation. Okay. And there were two quite distinct episodes. And the Scottish Reformation was one of the most thoroughgoing and far-reaching of any Reformation in the world.
It wasn't political in the way you'd say maybe the English Reformation was.
Yeah, it didn't have the politics. It stripped the church back very much to a kind of, I guess, what you might say, a kind of fairly austere Presbyterianism. Yeah. And the Church of Scotland was the national church, which kind of came out of that. Now, the national church has kind of had its splits and divisions over the years. So there's been various offshoots.
So there's a Free Church of Scotland. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a Free Church of Scotland continuing. Yeah.
1843, the Great Disruption, a third of the Church of Scotland ministers leave
because?
At that point over patronage,
okay,
over who has the right to appoint a minister. Is it the landowner of the parish or is it the congregation?
Okay.
So they leave over that dispute. So there's been various kind of offshoots. There's been a few kind of amalgamations along the way as well, where churches have come back together. But you have the high watermark, really, in terms of nominal membership of the Church of Scotland is probably the 1950s.
Right.
Where you're up to almost a quarter of the population. But then what's happened since is you've had this really rapid collapse. So since the 1950s, the Church of Scotland has lost 80% of its membership. An astonishing figure, almost up to like 100 people leaving every week, in terms of
In terms of mainstream denominational decline, that must be at the top of the UK league, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And the latest iteration of that is just in the last couple of years, the Church of Scotland have announced a huge kind of downsizing programme where they're really reducing the number of parishes across Scotland by about 40% or so. So you're seeing in cities like Edinburgh, the number of Church of Scotland parishes being reduced from somewhere in the 70s to down in the 40s. really in less than a decade is the plan. So really stringent kind of dramatic kind of cuts, which reflect the underlying congregational base, because obviously lots of these churches are pretty much empty. So it makes sense in terms of, you know, managing your real estate and being good stewards. But it's a very tragic reflection of the fact that, you know, it's a denomination which has really been in a state of collapse for a number of decades now.
And just give us a quick update on Church of Scotland, because there's, you know, a lot of evangelicals have left, haven't they? So they've voted to allow same-sex weddings. Is that right?
So there's been a series of kind of almost kind of salami slicing in that issue, of a kind of a gradual kind of movement towards a kind of full-blown kind of recognition, endorsement, and indeed celebration in some cases of kind of same-sex marriage. The latest iteration of, I think, that kind of theological drift and move away from the Bible has been really the downgrading of the Westminster Confession, which, of course, was a kind of gold standard Reformation document of kind of Reformed doctrine and church polity. And the Church of Scotland have made the decision to sort of put in its place as the kind of ultimate supreme standard the Nicene Creed. And in that sense, the Westminster Confession is kind of being downgraded to being one just a number of almost more consultative type documents.
And Rachel, tell us a little bit more about geography of Scotland and population density. So I said this to you before, and I'm willing to confess it in public, but my knowledge of Scotland tends to be limited to either football teams and where they play, or actually, you know, the big cities I've heard of. So, if you gave me a map of Scotland, I can
put
Inverness,
them where they are.
pretty much. I can tell you where Inverness is and what its football team is. I can tell you where Aberdeen is. I can tell you Perth, Dundee, Edinburgh, Stirling, Glasgow. I basically run out at that point. Mm-hmm. So, just tell us about how the population density works, because it's enormous space.
Yep.
So, do most people live in one particular area that spread around? How does that affect how the country kind of works, if you like?
Well, I guess most people live in the central belt between Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Is that what it's called, the central belt?
Yeah, that's the central belt. And I think it was a striking fact for me to fully realise was the population of Scotland's around about between 5 and 6 million currently. The population of London is about 10 million. So that just gives you a bit of a sense of the scale of number of people. The majority of those people would live in those places
What sort of percentage, roughly?
I'm not the facts person.
People are not going to write in, or if they do, we'll burn their postcards. Approximately, what do you think, Andy?
Oh, I think sort of 70%.
Oh, really?
Sort of
high.
Yeah, it's really high.
There's also, so if you go up the kind of east side of Scotland, up to Dundee and Aberdeen, there's two larger cities there. Yeah. But between that kind of northeast kind of coast and the central belt, I mean, I would reckon almost 80% of people are living in those areas where they've got the urban density.
Yeah.
So you've got a situation where Scotland is 8% of the UK population, but about 32% of the landmass. And that population is relatively
and
concentrated.
And 1% of the roads.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of getting from place to place, right?
It can be quite tricky in some places.
The A9 still hasn't been dualled. Yeah. I read about that in Rishi Sunak's
speech. Not all the way through. Some of it.
So there are huge parts of Scotland which are relatively, you know, empty, really, in terms of population. Just small settlements, small towns. But, you know, the kind of northwest of Scotland, you know, is one of the great kind of unpopulated areas of Europe, really.
Right, okay. Yeah. And just give us a minute, either of you, I don't mind, really, on the islands. Mm. We hear about the highlands and the islands. And you look on the map, you see there are a lot of islands.
Yeah.
And obviously there are groups of islands, the Hebrides, Shetland.
Yeah.
How am I doing? Orkneys.
Good, Orkneys, yeah, good.
Yes, I know about Scapa Flow. That's about the limit of my knowledge. Yeah. So that must be just a different kind of geography, different kind of place again. Quite cut off.
So in terms of travel, and of course some of those islands, particularly in the Outer Hebrides, have been kind of quite strongholds of kind of Presbyterian churches like the Free Church of Scotland up until quite recently. And indeed, you know, some large congregations still there.
And places of revival.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Hebridean revival, very famously.
Absolutely. But yeah, that brings, I mean, like all of Scotland, the islands is another component just to the sort of geographical spread, some of the challenges of travel and distances. kind of resources. So they have quite distinct cultures as well. Although that's becoming more mixed, obviously, as time goes on. So if you take Orkney, for example, the Orkney Isles is probably 50% now Orcadians, kind of native people, and 50% people that have come from outside. So you are getting increasing kind of mix there.
Presumably, Rachel, cities are... that the cities are becoming much more cosmopolitan, multicultural, all those sorts of things. I mean, the First Minister is, I don't know what his, he's a Muslim, but I don't know what his background is, but he's a Muslim. So there's a increasing mix of people, I guess.
Increasing, but again, I think that's a distinct difference between Scotland and the rest of the UK. I think it's probably been, it's slower in some ways, that kind of, and I would say you'd probably notice a difference again between Glasgow and Edinburgh, with Glasgow probably more multicultural in some places than Edinburgh. I guess some of the cultures that we have are more Eastern European, that kind of thing, than anything else. So people coming from that way. It's there, but not... you wouldn't see it probably the same as you would in other parts of the UK, I think.
You've noticed in Glasgow, so since the 60s in Glasgow, there's been quite a substantial kind of South Asian community. Largely of Pakistani origin there. Scotland's, up until very recent decades, had very little Afro-Caribbean immigration. So you're starting to see more diversity in those fronts now. But as Rachel's saying, Glasgow had quite a strong South Asian population, a bit like some of the kind of towns in that kind of M1, M6 corridor in England. But immigration has progressed at a much slower rate than in other parts of the UK.
Just, we're not going to do a huge amount on politics, but just touch on politics. I get the impression, looking in, that Scotland is aggressively secular, much more so than the UK. That certainly seems to be the political kind of leaning. Is that representative of the country as a whole, would you say, Rachel, or is that something? So, you know, we're hearing, you know, SNP, Green Alliance, Holyrood, you know, really at the forefront of gender change laws and things like that. Is that representative of the country, or is that a political movement?
I mean, I would say it's probably representative of a very small part of the cities, but more generally, no, I would say that. I guess people are on the softer end of that. Like, people would agree with some of it, but the kind of more further political side of that, I think.
So saying like people would Scotland agree. Is- aggressively secular. It's not quite right.
No. It may I be mean, politically, it seems that way, but I think for most of the general population, they're happy to accept a lot of things, but aren't pushing them or kind of probably as aggressive as other parts of it would be, I think.
You've got some stats on that, haven't you?
Of course he does.
Well, I don't know about stats, but
he is like the evangelical statter.
Well, I don't know about stats, but I think Rachel's right, and there's a kind of strange paradox in that we have a parliament which has prided itself on being, you know, very progressive, you know.
And prided, boom, boom. Was that kind of it?
Well, But, you know, it's obviously, you know, taking it as a bit of a kind of badge of honour to be the first to introduce much more kind of progressive policies on hate crime. And we've got conversion therapy proposals and other kind of social issues like that. So they've been very kind of keen, you know, to advance on those kind of causes. Interestingly, you know, the narrative doesn't always kind of stand up to deeper examination. So politically, Scotland's seen as a country which is to the left of England, for example, you know, much more into kind of what you would call maybe kind of welfare kind of policies, kind of left of centre kind of social policies. So we have free prescriptions and free tuition fees for students going to college. But when you actually dig a little bit deeper into social attitudes, so the social attitude surveys that are done, and you ask Scottish people what they think on particular questions about immigration or taxation, they're actually remarkably similar to England, you know. So that doesn't always kind of play itself out in how people vote, but the underlying attitudes and beliefs, actually, there's not a massive divergence there.
Okay, well, let's talk about the gospel rather than politics. So basically, a country where Christianity has collapsed, as it has in other home nations, But it looks like in a particularly recent, spectacular way.
Yeah.
And it sounds, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Annie, but it sounds as though you're saying actually it's collapsed from a position of quite robust Christianity. Mm. I think, you know, the Anglican collapse in the Church of England, you could argue, has not collapsed from a position of robust quasi-evangelical status, has it? It's always been very, very broad, where it sounds like the Church of Scotland, the Westminster Confession, has been a bit more orthodox, perhaps. Mm. And so there's been a massive collapse there. But what does that mean for evangelical churches? Mm. There are obviously challenges that come along with that. There are opportunities too. What are some of the challenges, Andy?
Yeah, so, I mean, there has been this very dramatic collapse. Obviously, it's happened quite rapidly. The illustration I often use is a bit like when one of these massive sinkholes suddenly appears in a street. But actually, for ages beforehand, the underneath the surface has been getting washed away.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And suddenly, so the big collapse in the kind of 60s, 70s up to now, you know, probably has come in the back of a lot of theological and cultural kind of washing away that happened in the decades, you know, prior to that, both theologically and, you know, culturally. In terms of where it's left the evangelical church, I mean, like in other parts of the UK, the evangelical church in Scotland is one of those parts of the broader church which has shown a little bit of resilience and even a little bit of growth in areas. Now, don't take that for granted, because there's lots of reasons why an evangelical church might collapse or close, you know, pride and legalism, you know, compromise, you know, or whatever it could be. You know, so it could be doctrinally pure, but in other ways, you know, ripe for collapse. But what that has meant is that the proportion of evangelicals within the Scottish church has grown. So as the overall numbers have collapsed, the percentage of evangelicals has grown. Okay. Yeah. So we've got a stat here for you, Adrian. You'll be pleased to know that. So
the
So the Brierley survey, which came out in 2016, which was the kind of last, I think, very comprehensive kind of study of church going and the kind of different church groups, said that 1994, they recorded that 26% of Scottish churchgoers self-identified as evangelical.
Right.
In 2016, that had risen to 35%.
Really? So that'd be much higher than in England, I would think.
Yeah, overall church scores. Yeah. Now, of course, the numbers overall have come down, but it just means that proportion of evangelicals, because they've kind of held up relative to other areas or other parts that have collapsed. I guess the significance of that is that if you meet somebody in Scotland today who says they're a Christian, they're that bit more likely to be a genuine born-again believer who might know the gospel, as opposed to somebody who says they're a Christian, but it's just that that's a very nominal kind of cultural thing for them.
And tell us, Rachel, a little bit about, just paint a picture for us about the role of women in the church and women's ministry. You know, we all know the John Knox quote, but, you know, in terms of just, is it in a healthy place? Is it developing? What are some of the challenges as churches try and think about releasing people for ministry?
I would say it's developing, it's growing. Okay. So I started...
What are some of the good things that have happened?
There's more of us.
Okay.
I think on the set, the basic level of it. So when I started at Charlotte 2012, I probably knew about four... maybe five women in full-time kind of paid roles within churches doing similar things in Scotland, in the kind of, I guess, churches similar to Charlotte in that kind of way. We are now growing, not a rapid rate, but we are growing. There's more churches doing it, and we're discovering more churches who have women on staff as well. So that's really exciting to see.
So you've got a little group meeting.
Yes,
from different kinds of churches.
Yeah,
but a little group,
so we started the...
10 years ago, perhaps might not have been possible.
Not in the same way, no. So we have the Scottish Women in Ministry Network, which we've established this year. And we had our conference in May, gathered together a couple of times over the course of the year. And that is a broad kind of group from FIC churches, I guess independent churches who've left the Church of Scotland, and free churches generally, which is exciting to kind of be able to do that and just encourage one another in ministry. And then we're just seeing more women being trained as well. So more women in church apprenticeship schemes, and then now having kind of women in ministry kind of training roles. So that kind of post-apprenticeship, giving them some input, like you would a kind of church leader or pastor in training role before they'd go
into... So the training scene in Scotland is reasonably healthy, isn't it? I think, looking from the outside, it certainly seems to me,
yeah,
a number of, you know, if you wanted to go do residential training or full-time training, you know, you could go to Highland Theological Seminary or college, it's called, isn't it? Sorry. And you could be at London. Can I get this right? Edinburgh, London. Don't write in. Don't write in. I'm going to really muck this up, aren't I? Edinburgh Theological Seminary.
Yeah.
There's Cornhill in Scotland.
Yep.
There's the PTC, the Pastor's Training Course. It's kind of a follow-on that Andy Gettle runs.
Yeah.
And there's other things going on as well. So it feels like that's a reasonably healthy place to be in terms of training.
Yeah, and I think the increasing model that we're seeing is people doing a kind of the dual, so not so much going away to do college, but actually doing it alongside a placement in the church. So a lot of the apprentices in Scotland are buying into Cornhill. There's a new course started up in Aberdeen where they're kind of doing training at that kind of apprenticeship level for people, which is really exciting to see. And now, different churches, a lot of them are doing this pastor and training role. So even, again, within the Free Church, some of them have changed from doing the degree for over 3 years to now doing it over four, which gives them more time to have more time in a church. So that kind of model of local church involvement, training in the local church, placement in the local church, all throughout the year alongside theological education.
I suppose the challenge is if you could still be a very, very long way away. Time and distance, actually.
Yeah.
From a provider, you know, if you're in Orkney.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to fly to get anywhere, I presume.
Ferry and drive.
So obviously some of the colleges are doing remote kind of studies. Yeah. So if you are Edinburgh Theological Seminary or at Highland Theological College, they'll often be able to, you know, sort of Skype in, as it were. Skype. I am that old.
Zoom. Zoom.
Skype. That's right. Google it, kids. But yeah, so you've got these options.
You can follow Andy on his MySpace page.
and just in kind of to be kind of comprehensive, obviously there's other colleges like Faith Mission and Tilsley College.
Yeah, okay,
and,
yes.
And
yeah,
a lot of churches are now doing Crosslands, of course, you know, which gives that kind of flexibility.
Yeah. So some really good training options.
So sort of partnership training, both in church, but also then meeting with a cohort.
Oh, that sounds very encouraging.
I guess I should know the numbers of actual people who are doing training because of my involvement in the Bonner Trust, but I know this year that we've given grants of up to £300,000, and that's for people doing apprenticeships or pastors and women in ministry and training, and that's increased up to that level over the past 12 years.
Tell us what the Bonner Trust is.
We essentially give grants to people who are doing training, so either apprenticeship level.
And who or what is Bonner? I do actually know the answer to this, but I'm going to pretend to not know the answer.
This is where Andy's probably better. He's a Scottish minister, Horatius Bonner, who wrote hymns was involved in
and
churches.
All kinds of things,
he did a lot of things, back in the day.
We're good. I think what we'll do is we'll split this podcast into two because there's so much I want to learn. And we haven't really talked about any of the challenges and unreached places. I think we'll put that in episode two of this little mini season. So let's just wrap up with this. Tell me a little bit about independency in Scotland, Andy. Because we've been talking about the Church of Scotland, Presbyterian. Mm. We've been talking about the Free Church of Scotland, split from it, Presbyterian. Mm. We've been talking about, you mentioned Tilsley College. Mm. That's a Brethren, that has Brethren roots. So just fill me in a little bit about the history of independency in Scotland and kind of state of play for independence. Yeah.
So basically, independency, to some extent, has always been there, but it's been a smaller constituency of churches in Scotland, I think, because of the dominance of Presbyterianism.
Yeah.
So you go back to the 1600s, you get the kind of big divide at the kind of Westminster Convention, where the Scots come back and set up a Presbyterian system.
Yeah, yeah.
The English Puritans, obviously, you know, stick with either Anglicanism or with much more independent churches. So in England, you'll get independent chapels that go back to the 1600s.
Yep.
You don't really get that in Scotland. Independency doesn't really start to become a big thing until you get some of the independent Baptists in the 1800s, the Haldanes.
Okay. So it's a relatively new movement, really.
So it means that overall, independent churches have been a smaller subset of the wider Scottish church than they would have been in England. You could argue that maybe there was less maybe need or space, you know, for them. But that is changing quite rapidly now because of the collapse of denominations, because of new church plants that are often independent.
And there's a nimbleness, isn't there, about independency that means you can just, you know, get on and do it, thinking about the politics.
That's right. And then there's a proliferation of churches that have come from ethnic minority backgrounds, which are often independent. So the landscape is definitely changing from being quite monolithic in terms of big denominations, very small subset of independency, to that kind of equation is kind of starting to move, you know, with more independent churches appearing.
How many FIC churches are there in Scotland?
There's 34.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're a small part of the Venn diagram. We've doubled in about the last 10 years in terms of the number of churches, which is encouraging. But, you know, relative to England, you know, that's a smaller subset because proportionately to England, you know, we should have a few more churches than that.
Okay. Just as we come to an end, just thinking about, you know, some of the good things to rejoice in. One of the, I think, the great stories is not actually an FIC story. It's about the Free Church of Scotland. It's in great health, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doing great things, and we should be rejoicing in that. There's a thing in the paper a year ago now about the applying the R value, you know, that wonderful COVID R value. Are denominations growing or are they declining? And applying it to different groups. And actually the only two groups that are identified, the two key groups really that were identified as growing were FIEC and the Free Church of Scotland. So there's lots to rejoice in there,
isn't there, Rachel,
in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the real benefits as well of in Scotland at the moment is the partnerships that are developing between not only with the Free Church, but with the independents as well. And the Free Church has seen their kind of desire to plant churches, partnering with people like 20 Schemes as well to get churches in different areas. So I was at Edinburgh Theological Seminary and it was just really exciting to kind of hear their desire to grow and develop and change the kind of develop their training culture as well, and then where they're looking to get churches and see the real need to develop that.
Great.
Yeah.
So land of good things happening, a great history. Obviously, there's need as well. Let's touch on that in a second episode. So don't just listen to this one, listen to both. And we'll talk a little bit about maybe some of the unreached places there are in Scotland and some of the challenges in reaching people in Scotland. For the moment, Rachel and Andy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Has been Independence. If you enjoyed listening, do rate and review. It just helps other people find us and we'll catch up with you in episode 2 coming very soon.